Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
That's one of the wonderful aspects about studying food, is that it can be done from so many different perspectives, and it brings together people from so many different departments here on campus.
That's Peter Todd, representing the Cognitive Science Department at Indiana University. He's combining his personal interest in food with his professional work, looking at how we make decisions. He'll be here to talk about food choice and smart shopping carts. Soybeans aren't just for food and feed anymore. Harvest Public Media looks at the many uses for the crop. And two chicken recipes, each cooked in only one pot. Not too many dishes to wash in Chef Daniel Orr's kitchen today. There was really only one story this week in the food world, and Lou Anne Johnson is here to tell us about it.
It's the government shutdown, Annie. NPR reported on how it is affecting food aid. 9 million low-income women and children rely on the government for food assistance through the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, known as WIC. And according to Douglas Greenaway, president and CEO of the National WIC Association, some of the state programs that serve these women and children may run out of money by next week, while others may have enough funds to offer the food benefits through the end of the month. The USDA explained Friday in a memo that the 10,000 WIC clinics around the country will have enough funds to operate for a week or so. And after that, the states most in need may be able to get something from the federal pot of $125 million in contingency funding. The food benefits average about $45 a month. Benefits include vouchers to purchase whole grains, fruit and vegetables, fish, dairy, and dairy substitutes, and infant formula. To qualify for the program, women and their young children have to have acute nutritional deficits. In terms of food inspections, the FDA has shut most of that down until government funding is restored. But the USDA will continue manning every meat production facility with full-time inspectors. And a story from the drive-thru. It takes McDonald's customers 9 seconds longer than other fast food eaters to order, pay, and drive away with their fries. That's according to the 2013 drive-thru performance study conducted for QSR magazine. It takes an average of 189.5 seconds in a McDonald's drive-thru, the slowest ever time in the 15-year history of the study. This isn't insignificant information for fast food corporations. Many major chains do 60 or 70% of their business at the drive-thru. Check out our website. We get news posted all day, every day at eartheats.org.
Get more details about these stories in this week's podcast post. Find that on our website. Lou Anne Johnson, thanks.
You got it.
If you think soybeans are just for livestock and vegetarians, think again. Over 3 billion bushels of soybeans are produced in the U.S. each year, and more of them are being used in manufacturing and biodiesel. This means money for Midwestern soybean farmers and the researchers who study them. Justine Grieve has the story from Harvest Public Media.
Whether you grew up harvesting soybeans or have no idea what a soybean looks like, you probably encounter them all the time. Just take a walk around a grocery store. These chips contain soy oil. This veggie chicken is made from soy protein. And this real chicken was probably fed soybeans.
Outside of the grocery store, soy shows up too. You'll find it in glue, paint, biodiesel, and even the backing on AstroTurf. Don't get me wrong, these soybean uses are not really new.
Even Henry Ford in the 1930s had built cars using soy oil paint. They were using soy oil in the shock absorbers of the cars. So, I mean, that goes back a long time.
That's Kansas State agronomy professor William Chapaw. He says people have been using soy in industry for a century now, but in the last decade, interest has really picked up. In 2001, just over 3% of soybean oil went to inedible uses. But by 2011, that number was up to 20%. All parts of the soybean can be used in industry, but companies most commonly use the oil. Farmer Bob Hazelwood serves on the United Soybean Board and the Kansas Soybean Commission.
Most times, if you have a product that you use petroleum-based oil in, with some modification, you can use soybean oil and replace some of that petroleum-based oil.
He says soybeans have an advantage over petroleum because they're available every year right here in America.
And, you know, a lot of the manufacturers are looking for a more green solution to their products, and soybeans kind of help them to fit that niche.
To develop these bio-based products, some companies rely on researchers like those at the Kansas Polymer Research Center. The center in Pittsburgh, Kansas, develops and tests polyurethanes and plastics made from soy oil. It gets funding from the government, the United Soybean Board, and private companies like Cargill. Here's research manager Ivan Yavni.
Our orientation was to develop something that can be used by big industry and put on the market.
He says they've been pretty successful, and you can see the evidence around the building.
These sofas that have polyurethane here, you can see here in our entrance hall.
The sofa contains filling made with 30% soybean oil. While basically anything that's made out of petroleum can be made out of soybeans, the trick is doing it as well and as cheaply. That's why the sofa is not made entirely of soy.
That is our goal, of course, our dream.
Ron Model, grain science professor at Kansas State University, says the issue is economic as well as technological.
The plastics markets in particular are heavily oriented towards petroleum-based products. You have a market that's already established. In many cases, the infrastructure supports the petroleum product. So when the petroleum industry has its own subsidies to keep its prices down, that makes it very difficult for soy to enter these markets.
But Model says the potential is clearly there. For one thing, the majority of industrial uses today rely on soybean oil. But he says manufacturing presents a great opportunity to use all parts of the soybean.
The area that's not being exploited so far is the carbohydrate fractions. If we can determine ways of making those into something akin to plastics, I think that's a huge area that hasn't been exploited yet.
If the researchers are correct and market conditions are right, the future of soybeans may be in factories and fuel as much as food and feed. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Justine Grieve.
Read and listen to more stories from the reporting team at Harvest Public Media at harvestpublicmedia.org. As a kid, Peter Todd liked playing with food, creating new culinary concoctions, as he put it. As an adult, he's playing with food in a different way. He's a professor of cognitive science, psychology, and informatics at Indiana University. He looks at what influences our food choices. Nutrition labels, for instance, not so much. For our latest installment of Food School, all the knowledge, none of the homework, I caught up with him following his talk at Big Red Eats Green. One of the things that really struck me was, as consumers, we're bombarded with all of this information when we're at the grocery store, trying to pick the package of cream cheese that we want to buy, the color of the label, where it's located in the store, the calorie count, what the ingredients list includes. But what I took from your talk is that as consumers, we actually use only a couple bits of information to make choices in the grocery store as compared to all the different bits of information that are thrown at us. Can you talk about that?
That's absolutely right, that when we are confronting our common everyday food choices, most of the time we're making those choices on the basis of habit and familiarity. So we don't need to use and we don't use the new information that might be available to us. People very rarely pick up a package and look at the ingredient list or the nutrition information on the side. And they most often are looking for things that they've already had before. And so all it takes to do that is name brand recognition or knowing where in the store they had bought the item the previous time they were in there.
So I don't even know if you can speak to this, but as you know, people who are trying to change the way people eat, get away from high-salt, high-fat foods, highly processed foods, go to more local foods, if people are just going to buy from their habits, are we fighting a losing battle?
So what needs to be done then is to somehow inspire or shock people into seeing the choice now as a new, different thing that they need to do to make in the store. So somehow change the situation so that they do become conscious of the choice and go beyond just looking for what they always get. And one way of doing that is to inform people that there are new products and that they should have a look at them. So having displays in stores with something new that people haven't seen before, that's an occasion on which people will investigate more and will try to get more information. They might try a free sample. They might look at the ingredients on the package and see, okay, this new thing, is it something that I want to add to my diet? Another way of doing that is to try to catch people's attention by changing what the label looks like. So they pick up a familiar package, but now there's something different on it, like suddenly a stop sign, which is displaying to them some information about the contents, the nutritional contents of the food that they might be interested in. And if that's catching the attention enough, then that can be a way of getting information to people to change their decision then, which again will probably become a habit after that. And so then they'll start to ignore that new information next time they're there.
I was reading a little bit through the study that you published, and it said something along the lines of consumers can make good choices with less information. What is good? What does good choice mean?
So good choice can be a difficult thing to try to define exactly, because there's different dimensions that we could measure goodness on, and different people will be using different dimensions on different occasions. So a good choice for entertaining may involve different kinds of foods from a good choice for making your child's lunch or for having a daily breakfast. But the kinds of things that you could make a good choice on the basis of would be nutritional content in some cases. It would be special good taste in other cases, like when you're entertaining. So overall, there are these different dimensions that we could measure goodness on, but how we go about judging that goodness can still, on each of those dimensions, involve rather few pieces of information.
When I heard you talk about this, the other thing that also popped into my mind was a comparison with what was happening in New York City with the soda ban and how the government officials were trying to basically affect change from the top down and restrict how much soda people could drink in New York City. Your research seems to sort of come at that from the other way, figure out maybe how people make the choice to drink soda, maybe why, although I'm not sure why is part of the scope of this study. Maybe can you just respond to those two different ways of going about this whole food situation?
Absolutely. In order to make top-down efforts be effective, we believe that you need to know what is going on from the bottom up in terms of how people are making their decisions. So if you have the wrong perspective on how people are making their food choices, then that can lead you to make the wrong policy decisions for how to influence those food choices. So for instance, if you believe that people will use whatever information is available to them to guide their food choices, then that can lead you to believe that putting more information on the package is going to be a good way of influencing those decisions. People, under that model, people would pick it up and turn it over and read it and make a educated, rational choice each time they're going to the store. But that isn't how people usually are making food choices, as I mentioned before. And so you need to take into account the realistic way that people under time pressure are making their food choices, and in that case, figure out what is a way that you can make a small change to their food environment, which may be packaging, may be placement of goods, that will enable them to make a fast choice, but now a different choice from what they were making.
Peter Todd is a professor of cognitive science, psychology, and informatics at Indiana University. In the second half of our show, I'll talk about technology that could enable your shopping cart to give you information about your weekly grocery haul. You mentioned people under time constraints, aren't we all? Here's a recipe that's really straightforward and cuts down on cleanup time because it's just one pot. and a bamboo steamer, which is a series of cooking trays with latticed bottoms to allow steam from a boiling pot to cook food in the top of the tray. Chef Daniel Orr has his all set up.
Okay, so you can see what that looks like here on the stove set up. What we're going to do is start by seasoning our chicken, and I'm going to just cut some little slits, kind of like scales, down the chicken breast, leaving little pockets. I'm going to rub about a teaspoon of garlic on each one, and then I'm going to grab a nice handful of fresh herbs, basil, thyme, parsley, scallions. And what you do is you tuck a little bit of that into each one of those slits. What this is going to do, it's going to allow your chicken to cook more quickly, and also it's going to flavor even the thickest part of the bird. So then what we're going to do is put our chicken in the steamer, just kind of tuck it along the side. Okay, and then you can take all of your favorite vegetables. And again, you want everything to cook at the same rate, so you want to cut everything fairly thinly. So you've got this really beautiful box, and we're just going to take it over to the stove, right on the steamer. We're going to cover that up, and we're going to leave that on high. Make sure you have enough water in there so it doesn't burn up on you. And we're going to let that steam for about 10 minutes. Ready? Thank you, dear.
You're welcome.
You ready for the reveal?
Voila! All right, you can see that steam coming off of there. And we're going to just season it with the veggies with a little salt and pepper and just a sprinkle of lemon juice. So this is very, very healthy, very clean. We've got here on the side some sauces. The Asian one is a good one to start with. A little plum sauce, a little sesame oil, a little chili paste. All right, and that's it. That's a wonderful weekday dinner for the healthiest family in town.
Learn more about cooking with a bamboo steamer and see photos on our website. That's eartheats.org. Coming up, Peter Todd's new research seems like a great idea in theory.
It may scare people off. People might not want to be advertising with this glowing red handle that they're pushing around on their shopping cart that they have a high food mileage content in their cart.
Smart shopping carts giving us information about our food purchases. More about that coming up. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, therapeutic massage, and Hatha Yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. More with Peter Todd, professor of cognitive science at Indiana University. Let's stay in the grocery store and talk about the vessel with which you transport the goods that you're buying in the grocery store, the shopping cart. This is another part of your research that seems to be still sort of in the prototype department. Can you talk about what you're doing with shopping carts?
Absolutely. So that's a project that came out of collaboration with Yvonne Rogers, who was a professor here in informatics, who was interested in helping to change how people make decisions and act in the world through technology and through making pervasive technology. So trying to imbue the environment with intelligence and reactivity to human action. And so we got together thinking about what would be some ways that we could use technology to influence people's food decisions in the supermarket. And again, rather than taking this perspective of let's put more information into people's hands, like give them an app where they could scan a product that they were thinking about and the app would tell them yet more facts about it. That seemed the wrong way to go. We wanted to figure out how to reduce the information to even a single dimension that people might find valuable. And also, rather than give people information about each individual product that they are considering, give them information about the diet that they are choosing for, say, the whole coming week. So the whole set of things that they are putting into their shopping cart. And the way that we have gone about doing that is by giving people a sort of ambient source of information about the entire contents of their cart. For instance, make the handle of the shopping cart glow with different colors depending on some aspect of the content of the shopping cart. So if you are trying to keep track of the food miles of the products that you're buying, you can have the cart handle glow green when on average the food miles of the things that you're buying are low. They're mostly local. It can glow amber when they are coming from over 100 miles away on average, and it could glow red if you are buying mostly bananas and things imported from overseas. And through that single piece of information conveyed in a way that can be in the background or that you can pay attention to, this ambient display, we hope that would be able to nudge people's behavior, guide them to make better choices in the supermarket as they're shopping.
We're talking about this from the research angle. Your ideas on actually getting this into stores, could that become a reality anytime soon?
That's something that is probably more of a challenge than doing the research in the first place, because you bump up against the interests not only of the consumers of whether or not they want to use it, but the interests of the stores, if this is going to be something which is going to attract people to come shop in their stores, or it may scare people off. People might not want to be advertising with this glowing red handle that they're pushing around on their shopping cart that they have a high food mileage contents in their cart. So those hurdles are things that we still need to overcome before this idea can get into widespread use.
I see the feeling of shame as a possible way of encouraging people to eat, quote, better, unquote, because driving a shopping cart around the store with a glowing red handle, you're right, would probably be pretty embarrassing for a lot of consumers.
It could be, exactly. And when those kinds of social information cues can be imposed from above, like in energy markets where people get their energy bills that have a smiley face when they are using less energy than their neighbors and a frowny face when they're using more energy than their neighbors, that isn't going to be something that's particularly shameful for people, and also not something that an individual household will be able to necessarily choose, because they can't decide, I'm just going to change where I'm getting my energy from. But in deciding where you're going to buy your groceries from, if one chain uses this kind of technology and another chain doesn't, it may scare consumers away from the one that is using this kind of technology if they don't want their habits to be so blatantly obvious to the people around them.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming in. This has been great.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You can listen to my entire conversation with Peter Todd on the Earth Eats website. Check it out at eartheats.org. Another one-pot recipe with Daniel Orr. This time, the pot is a pumpkin. This maybe is one of the meatiest pumpkins I've ever seen in person. There's a lot of meat in here. Is there something you had to do specifically
in your
garden?
No, it's just the type of a variety of pumpkin. You can see that it's fully matured because the seeds are nice and filled out, and they're firm, they're hard. So that means it was picked at the peak of ripeness. So I've got a nice little chicken, and then we've got some nice fresh herbs, and this is really whatever you have around. So today I've got some rosemary, some thyme, basil, scallions, and we can throw in a little bit of sage and fennel if we wanted to. So I'm going to take this chicken and right over the pumpkin, I'm going to season it with salt and pepper. And at the same time, I'm going to season the pumpkin itself.
So, and you're not going light on the salt and pepper. There's a lot of seasoning going into this.
A lot of seasoning. Don't be afraid of flavor. This pumpkin is going to absorb a lot. It needs a lot of seasoning because it's a very bland vegetable. And then a trick that's great for any type of seasoning of poultry is take your two fingers and run them underneath the skin that runs over the breast. Okay, and you're just going to open up a pocket there. And then you can season, put your herbs right underneath there as well. And that way it's getting right on the meat. So you can see now I've got this beautiful chicken all ready to go. I'm going to pop that inside the cavity of the pumpkin. And then I'm going to add just a few more seasonings. About a cup of white wine. We've got some smoked paprika, garlic powder. And then I'm using some of my sweet seasoned spice blend. And that's a combination of about 10 different sweet spices that you might find in pumpkin pie spice blend. All right, we're going to drizzle it with just a little bit of oil. Put the lid back on, and then we're going to hold it in place with a couple skewers. Okay, and then we've got a roasting pan right here. And we're going to put about a half inch of water in the roasting pan. Put the whole pumpkin in there. And then we're going to put it in a 350-degree oven for 2 hours. And it's going to get nice and golden brown, and the pumpkin's going to heat up. It's going to steam the chicken, and we've actually got one already ready. So,
when did you make this morning? Seriously, when did you wake up?
I had to get up at 5:30 this morning just to get ready for Earth Eats. So,
that's not that bad. That's not so bad.
Okay, let's go find that pumpkin.
Woo, that is roasted, brown, and bubbling.
Doesn't that look good?
Yeah.
All right, and so to serve this, we're going to just remove those skewers, which are much easier to take out than they were to put in. And then you carefully remove
the reveal. Still steaming.
Ooh. Pull the chicken out, drain the juice out of it, and the juices should run clear, meaning that the chicken is all the way cooked. Just taste that liquid. Taste it for salt and pepper. I think this is perfect. Pour that nice pumpkin broth over the chicken and over the pumpkin wedge. And we've got a beautiful pumpkin baked chicken.
Two chicken recipes today, both exclusive to Earth Eats. Follow the recipes at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Ben Alford, Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Luann Johnson, Liz Leslie, Daniel Orr, Peter Todd, and the entire team at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, therapeutic massage, and Hatha Yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Happy eating, guys. Till next time, I'm Annie Corrigan.